Good morning. Today's daf in Yevamos is daf Lamed Ches. We're behind the daf. We're going to start again from the bottom, very bottom of Lamed Vav Amud Beis. It started the fourth parak of Yevamos the past couple of days. Thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. Daf Abilin Lezichon Eshmas Loos Lupin Zaltzman. The Mishnah itself has been dealing with a scenario where you do chalitza to a woman who is a muber, she's pregnant. You didn't know she was pregnant. You did chalitza to her too early. Should have waited the requisite 3 months. You didn't. You did chalitza to her. Is that a good chalitza or not? The answer is very simple. It's not. make a longer story short. It's machlok between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish. But the Gemara points out within in this regard in two other areas in Halach we pass on like Reish Lakish, and the answer is it's no good. It's not a good chalitza. It has no status whatsoever. She's a this woman can end up marrying a Kohen if she wants. Okay, that was point number one, which we concluded with yesterday. Another point is that we have the ideas of Knas, where if a man marries a woman that he shouldn't have married, so he has to divorce her. So we had a couple of examples of that yesterday. A man marries a woman who was pregnant with another man's baby. And the first marriage terminated, death of divorce, and now she marries this other man, but she's pregnant and she's going to have a baby. So the second man is not allowed to marry her for the next 24 months. And as we explained yesterday, because the woman is going to want to nurse this baby, and it's not his son, it's not the second husband's son, it's the first husband's son. So and he's not going to be sensitive to that, and he's going to impregnate her and stop her from lactating. So another gzera d'rabbanan, he's not allowed to marry for 24 months. And what if he does? So kanas, the rabbis imposed a fine. That's the opinion of Rabbi Meir we saw yesterday, that the rabbis imposed a fine in which he has to divorce her and he may never marry her again. Chachamim are slightly more lenient. The Chachamim say in such a scenario, he divorces her, but after 24 months is up, he's allowed to remarry her. Okay, all that on the table. We are just going to continue now where we left off yesterday. Amle Rav Ashi, Le Rav Oshia, Bredi Rav Idi. We started this yesterday, but let's begin from this point in time. We're at the very bottom of Lamed Vav Amud Beis, and we start with a dialogue. We start with a Mishnah. Hasam Tanan. We learned in the Mishnah over there. Rav Shimon Gamliel Amar Kol Shabbat Adam Lamed Yomei Nonefel. Okay, baby's born. Was that a viable child? So according to the opinion of Rav Shimon Gamliel, we don't know yet. We have to wait 30 days. If the baby survives 30 days postpartum, so then we know that the baby is a viable baby. And after that point in time, if the baby dies, it's a tragedy. But she gave birth, meaning we know that that was a viable baby. A lot of nafkamin, I mean, there's a lot of practical application of these halachas. Could take a look at the sign of the Gemara by the Amishpah, which we don't normally point to, but you'll see that it has applications regarding Avelus, it has applications regarding the mitzvah of Yibum, a lot of basic applications. Okay, but anyway, but Haloshah Sveka Havai. But that means, though, that within the first 30 days of life, we don't know yet, it's a status of Suffolk, whether or not this child is viable or not viable. And then on that we have the following discussion. Let's say the baby was born. Again, she, her husband died. She's a widow, but he left her. He left her pregnant, and she delivered a baby. And the baby doesn't make it to 30 days of age. Okay, so now we simply don't know. Meaning, we are right now in a state of suffix. We don't know whether or not she is a candidate for Yibum because it wasn't a viable baby, or no, it was a viable baby, just a baby that we don't know. So, and that, of course, means now that she may have a mitzvah of Yibum. Now, we're not going to do Yibum because we don't know, but she may have to do chalitza with her brother-in-law, or the other option is that she's perfectly fine to marry whoever she wants. Good. She's in a terrible suffix now. The amdav in his kacha. And she goes ahead and she does kiddushin with another man. So now what? So Ravina Mishmei Darava Amar Yimeshis Yisrael Hi Choletzes Yimeshis Kohen Hi Eino Choletzes. So the first psak that's offered is by Ravina. Ravina quotes the name of Rava, that if she is married to Yisrael, fine, so she'll receive chalitza from her brother-in-law. Okay. And that'll solve the problem. Because in the event that the child was not viable and she was a candidate for Yibam, Okay, so her brother-in-law will come over and do chalitza, and that will allow her to stay with her new husband. And Imesh is Kohen, but what if she is now married to a Kohen? Again, she shouldn't have married the Kohen to begin with, but what if she did? Now what do we do? Here's the problem. She can't get a chalitza, because once she gets chalitza, then she'll be a chalutza. Yeah, that's your smart statement of the day. So, and as a chalutza, she can't be, excuse me, she can't be married to a Kohen. So what do you do? So the answer is, this is now Ravina calling in the name of Rava, so you don't do chalitza. Now don't do chalitza, yeah, but this baby might not, this baby that died within the first 30 days of life might not have been viable. And that means that she had a Zika, she's still connected to her Yavam. So what do you mean don't do chalitza? Okay, so we're gonna answer that question in just a moment.
But here's the thing. You just said that if somebody just has a baby, they cannot get married for 2 years, so why is she getting married for 2 years?
No, the baby died. The case over here...
But she's getting married before the baby died, no?
Okay, correct. So, but okay, well, stay tuned. We're gonna answer that question. So, Misharsha says in the name of Rava. So, both of them are quoting Rava. So, obviously, you know what happened over there. But we're gonna explain that in just a moment as well. But Misharsha says in the name of Rava that no, in both cases you do chalitza. So, Amalei Ravina Rav Misharsha. So, Ravina says to Rav Misharsha, look, you're right, but you're wrong. You got Rava, but you didn't get the full story of Rava. So Ba'ortama Rava Hachi. So meaning right that night, meaning yesterday in the yeshiva before we all went home. So Rava said exactly what you said. That's true. But the next day, you know, Rava woke up. He thought about it more. He slept on it, got a good night's sleep, and Hadabe, and he had charata. Meaning he changed his opinion. So and the opinion now is Eina Choletzes. So Amalei. So in other words, so good. So now we have a machlokas between Amaraim, exactly what Rava said. And again, according to Rav Misharsha, so the halacha is you have to do chalitza. And again, Rav Misharsha makes perfect sense. Think about it. This woman had a baby, but we don't know if the baby was viable or not viable, and the baby died within the first 30 days. We don't know. So the baby may not have been viable. And if that's true, so that means then that the original husband died without issue. There was no zera. And so now there's a mitzvah of Yibam. How could she marry somebody else? So Misharsha says, yeah, good. So you're going to have, the brother-in-law is going to have to do chalitza. Again, he can't do Yibam because the baby may have been viable, but he's going to have to do chalitza. What if she's married to a Kohen now? Okay. That's Rav Misharsha's take. And now what Ravina is saying to Rav Misharsha...
What about the point that they cannot have chalitza when Yibam cannot be done?
Again, the there's no prohibition of Yibam, it's just it's a suffix. So we're not going to allow Yibam to be done. But it's not that whether she's totally removed from the world of Yibam. It's just because of the suffix. We mentioned this before. Meaning here it's not that there's no option of Yibam. It's just that you can't exercise that option. Okay? Because it's a suffix. So,
But the thing is that if the baby is not viable after 30 days, it's as though the guy never surviving child. So
correct.
There is a need for Yibam.
Correct. But because there's another side to that question, which is the baby may have been a viable baby...
didn't survive 30 days. How is it a viable baby?
It's what's called a suffix. In other words...
Suffix in for what? Suffix in what way?
Suffix in what way? Meaning we don't know if the baby was alive or dead, was a viable child or not. So again, many halachas. Avelis, right, is one example. I mean, you have to sit shiva for that baby. So if it was... for a miscarriage, you don't sit shiva. For a baby, you do. So what was this? So again, so that's exactly what Shimon Ben Gamliel's point. Only once you get to the point of 30 days... It's a baby. Prior to that, we don't know. It may have been just a delayed miscarriage.
But in terms of Yibam, there's no regard for Yibam because it's not a surviving child for past 30 days.
In other words, once a baby's over 30 days, then he had Zera.
Right.
Okay, good. In other words, then, I understand the idea.
If the baby didn't survive 30 days, then there needs to be Yibam. Why is there a doubt that there...
Because, no. It's not, let me see if I can correct. You're thinking. It's not Rav Shimon Gamliel says that if it doesn't survive 30 days, we know it's nothing. It's that if only after 30 days, we know it's a baby.
Right.
Prior to that, we don't know. Meaning there are two options or two viable options of what it was. Either it was a delayed miscarriage or it was an unfortunate premature death of a baby, of an infant. And that's exactly his point. We don't know. That's a good question. Probably the answer is it comes from the Bechor and Pidgin HaBen. Right? We know the Torah says you do Pidgin HaBen after 30 days.
because of...
Probably. The Gemara doesn't say that, but that's, you know, it's probably the right answer.
If the purpose of the evil, as he says, as Hashem says, is for keeping the name alive,
right.
So if there is no surviving child even past 30 days, how is it going to happen?
Yeah, I understand that, but let's take your argument, I don't want to spend too much time with this, but let's just take your argument to its logical conclusion. Right. Let's say 5 years after the husband died, the baby's 5 years old now, and then the baby dies. He's not a baby anymore. Now he's a toddler. Now you want to tell me that okay, we're back to Yibam because you know the only surviving baby died, or let's say 10 years later, or let's say 20 years later, and the child dies, or now the young adult dies.
Right.
So now we're gonna revert back to the mitzvah of Yibam, meaning it gets to the point where like you know you're gonna the Torah's not gonna operate that way. Where we're gonna revert back now to the mitzvah of Yibam because there's no surviving issue. Okay. All right. So anyway, let's go back over here. So again, let's go. Ravina and Rav Mishasha are both quoting Rava, and they're both giving you two different versions of what Rava said. So one says that you have to do chalitza in both cases, and the other one says no. If she married a Yisrael, she's gonna have to do chalitza. She'll receive chalitza from a Yavam. But if she married a Kohen, no. So again. So Ravina was on the side of being lenient. So Rav Mishasha was like that. No, and we're now on the top of Lamed Zayin Amud Aleph. Amar Leh. So this is Rav Mishasha talking to Ravina. So he says to him, Sharisu, you think Rava permitted it? Yehi Rava to Tashraf Tarba. So a biting comment. He says, okay, you know what? I really hope that one day Rava permits Chaylev. Right? Chaylev is one of the forbidden fats of an animal. It's not permitted. And no matter what kind of arguments you could provide, he can't permit it. It's just not. So he says, come on. And next thing you're going to tell me is that Rava says that Chelev is Mutter. I mean, come on. So, Hachinami, Muberes Chavero, Menikas Chavero, Nesula Kohen, my. Aver Rabbana Takantala Kohen, hello. So, and he says, and look, let's say you marry the pregnant your pregnant friend's wife. Meaning again, we're going back to the case that we discussed yesterday, where the woman either was a widowed or she was a divorcee and she was left pregnant. And what did we say yesterday that if a second man marries her, so he has to divorce her? What if that second man is a Kohen? Now what? That's it. In other words, he is going to divorce her and he never be able to marry her again. So what do we say over there? So Hanusul Kohen, my Avad Rabbanu Takantal Kohen. Oh, well. In other words, were the Chachamim over there are going to give a special dispensation because he's a Kohen, and if he divorces her, that's it. It's the end of the story. So Amalei Hachi Hashta. So he says in response, look, let's put everything in perspective. Bishlam Hashem Kevendika Rabbanu Depliga La Dereshim Megamel Adami Afagav Dol Shav Vlad Mal Yahave Gabe Eishes Kohen Kevendol Asher Abdin Karabbanu. Look, you can't compare the two cases. Let's take a look at our case and let's take a look at the previous case. Our case, again, what happened was is that the husband, the first husband died, leaving her childless, but not exactly. She was pregnant. She had a baby. The baby did not survive 30 days. So, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, what is that? That's called a suffix. And if now she goes and remarries a Kohen, so what do you do? So again, what was our answer? Again, in the more lenient version, don't do chalitza if the new husband's a Kohen. Gemara says, look, over here, I'll tell you why we're going to be lenient. Because everything over here was predicated on the original statement made by Rav Shimon Gamliel, that if the baby doesn't make it to 30 days, that baby's a suffix. Good. You know what that is? That's the opinion of Rav Shimon Gamliel. Now, we postulate like that opinion, but the Chachamim argue with Rav Shimon Gamliel. Now, we didn't get exposure to the Chachamim, but he argues. And the Chachamim say that once the baby's born, that baby is considered a baby. That's Zera. That's considered a child. And according to the Chachamim, if the baby dies a week, 2 weeks after birth, well, she had Zerah. She had a baby. So, excuse me. So there, look, we possibly like Rav Shimon Gamliel, but at least we have another Shita in which we could rely upon. Meaning in the plight of a Kohen, when she now is married to a Kohen, and the only option is to do Chalitza, but if you do Chalitza, that's it. So you know what? We have another Shita which we can rely upon. So the Gemara says, so in that case, in quote-unquote our case, we're going to be lenient because at least we have a Shita. But in the previous case where, again, a woman's husband, she's a widow, she's a divorcee. And now another man marries her even though she's pregnant. And even though he needs to wait the requisite 24 months, and he doesn't. there's no shita. Meaning, what are their two options? One option, number one, was the opinion of Rabbi Meir, which is he has to divorce her and never marry her again. And what's option number two? He divorces her, and then he can go back at a later point in time. But those are your only two options. Either option has divorce as part of the decision-making. He has to give her a divorce. And the only question is, can he marry her after 24 months? But there's no shita. So the Gemara says, you can't compare the previous case to this case over here. So, back to our Gemara, Lamed Zayin Amud Aleph, 10 lines down. But over here, who are we going to follow like? Reb Meir says he can never take her back. Fine. So there's simply no shita to rely upon. Fine, that's the difference between the two cases. Moving along. Itmar kishe b'soch shlosha ubarach. Now, we are again discussing a scenario in which he marries her prematurely. So again, we have our Mishnah, and we have the case of the man marrying a woman before the 24 months is from the birth of the new baby, or from the baby of the previous marriage. Either way, let's go back to our Mishnah. Our Mishnah, what can he not do? He cannot marry her within 3 months. And that's true by any widow and any divorcee. And the reason why is because of establishment of paternity. And as we learned yesterday, if he does, as a kenas, he's got to divorce her. What if he does the following? Let's say, right, she becomes available. She's a widow, she's a divorcee. And he does kiddushin within the first 3 months. And what's motivating him? He's afraid that if he waits the 3 months, someone's going to step in before him. All right, maybe that's what's motivating him. Either way. So he's mekashen within the 3 months, and then what does he do? He runs away. And the reason why he wanted to be mekashen is basically because he wanted to be the first. So he does kiddushin to her, and then he runs away, and he only comes back after 3 months. So we're not condoning. The Gemara is not condoning. The question is, are we going to force again in such a scenario? That's the question. Gemara deals with this question very briefly. And he runs away. So one opinion is, you put him in cherem. Put him in cherem. Exactly what that means. Presumably, the Rashi doesn't say this. Presumably, what that means is you're putting him in cherem in order so that he's going to give a divorce to his wife. Meaning he did no good. He didn't act which was rabbinically banned. And again, the reason behind that is because we want to establish paternity. Now, he ran away, so there's not going to be a paternity issue, and he's only going to come back after 3 months, but still, he did wrong. He violated his Siddur Rabbanan, so one opinion is put him in chayim. V'chad amar iruke mistaye. And the other opinion is no. You know what? He ran away, that helps. Usually running away doesn't help, but in this particular case, it's going to help. So we're not going to force a get. That's what Rashi says over here. Because he only wanted to make sure, secure her as his wife. But he wasn't going to have relations with her. And it's clear from the fact that he runs away. So Hava Uvda, the Gemara points out, this has actually happened. This was an occurrence. V'amalu Rafram, Iruke Mistaye. And the Gemara quotes in the name of Rafram that the fact that he ran away, that helps. Meaning, in this particular scenario. Okay, usually the cheater never prospers, but in this regard, in this one limited scenario, okay, it helped.
But Erushin is still marriage.
Yeah, that's exactly the point. Meaning that's why he's married her. So that in other words, he secured her. It wasn't just a commitment; it was more than a commitment. It was.
But he's married her in the culture without
being. Yeah, correct. That'll be the presumption. Okay, all right. Suffolk Bentisha, and here we go. Let's go back now. And this is yesterday's daf. I realized, okay, we're not going to make it. We're not going to cover catch up ground today. I can already promise you that. And the reason why is because the next discussion, although it's great, it's complicated. So we'll try to do it well, but with the recognition that we're behind. But it is just great discussion coming up. Let's go over what happened in our Mishnah. In our Mishnah, someone did Yibam too early. Okay. 2 months after the death of his brother, he takes the widow, and he does the mitzvah of Yibam with her. Although we don't know if it's the mitzvah of Yibam, because what then happens is she delivers a baby 7 months later. So now we're really stuck. In other words, on one hand, the baby could have been the original husband, which means that there was no mitzvah of Yibum. On the other hand, the baby could have been his, because the 7-month gestation is a viable gestation. So we don't know. So what did the Mishnah say? So the Mishnah said, vis-a-vis the child, it's a suffix. The child doesn't know who his father is. However, the child is kosher. No mamzeris. Because think about it. Either option for the child is fine. If the child was a result of the first brother, good. And if the child was a result of the second brother, that means that he was a product of Yibum, which is also good. So the child status is fine. And then, obviously, the parents need to get a divorce, because we don't know if this is a Yibum setting or if it's not a Yibum setting. And the Gemara then pointed out, the punctuation of the Mishnah was that they have to bring a Karmen Hashem Tabor. Okay. To that, now we're starting with the Gemara, Safik Betisha, Amalei Rav Nachman, Lema Halacha, Rav Nashim, Rav Nashim, Letisha Yalada. So first the Gemara starts off with, why is this a suffix? You know, most gestations go for 9 months. Okay, there are some that go for 7. But in terms of the statistics that they were dealing with back then, but that's not the majority, that's not the rove. The rove is 9. Amalei Neshedidan L'Shiva Yalada. So the first answer to that question is, no, that's not, your statistics are wrong. Our women give birth after 7-month gestation. Now, he's not saying that unilaterally. He's just simply saying that that is just as much of an option as a 9-month gestation. So basically, both of them are viable options. So, Amalei Neshedidchu, Averuba Dama. They say, okay, your women give birth after 7-month gestation. Okay, but again, we're looking at statistics. And when you look at statistics, you can't look at just one sample size. You got to look at the population. Most women give birth after 9 months of gestation, not 7. Amalei Hachi Kamina. So the Gemara says, no, you totally misunderstood me. Rov Nashim Yaladam Tisho Mi'el Shiva. Now look, on one hand, you're right. Most women give birth after 9-month gestation. I'm not going to argue with you. However, Chol Yolas Tisho Uber Nikol Shlish Yameha. But I will say this, though. If it's a 9-month gestation, so when do we first recognize the baby? 3 months. Okay. Vizu Hova Lohuka Uber Lishlish Yameha Itrele Ruba. Now over here, what just happened? Think about it. He married her 2 months after she became a widow. And then she's pregnant. She delivers a baby 7 months later. Now, whose baby is it? Well, wouldn't there be a good argument to make that if a month later she's showing? Aren't we now have strong indication that this baby is a result of the first husband? She's not going to start showing a month after. If the second husband was the one who impregnated her, she's not going to be showing a month later. That's not an option. So now, it's 3 months later, she's not showing. So isn't that now, doesn't that make for a good case that this baby is in fact not the first, but rather the second? And so therefore now we have conflicting arguments. On one hand, most women have a 9-month gestation. On the other hand, she didn't show after 3 months. If this was a 9-month gestation. Okay, good. That's why we're confused, and that's why the Mishnah remains in a suffix. And then the Gemara just cleans up the argument a little bit. So the Gemara says, first of all, that argument that you just gave is so compelling, meaning normally a woman shows after 3 months, and this woman didn't. So now, I'm gonna now be compelled to say that this was a 7-month gestation, a product of the second union, not the first union. So the Gemara says, no, so lebasrahu elaima roba yolas tisha uber nikolishlichama v'haimid lohukolishlichama yisraelei ruba. So the Gemara just cleans up the argument a little bit. No, we're not saying that every 9-month gestation is showing at 3 months. No, we're just saying that that's what happens most of the time. So now again, so we're back to this is why we're confused in a state of suffix, because on one hand, most gestation periods go 9 months. That's true. But then again, most 9-month gestation periods show after 3 months. She now, if in fact was impregnated by the first husband, should be showing a month into her second marriage. And she's not. That's why we're confused. And that's why the Mishnah remains by suffix. Okay. Tana Rabbanan. Rishon Roilios Kohen Gadol Visheni Mamzer Misafik. Okay, now, this baby that came out 7 months later, he can become a Kohen Gadol. That's just the Gemara's way of simply saying no psul whatsoever, meaning the parents behaved in an inappropriate manner, but it's not mamzerus, not at all. If the child wanted to, he can become a kohen gadol. Okay, And again, because we go back to the point that I made it just a couple of moments ago. The reason why is because, again, your two options are, it was a nine-month gestation, which means that he was a product of the first union, which is perfectly fine, or it was a seven-month gestation, meaning that he is a product of the surviving brother, but that means then that the surviving brother did the mitzvah of Yibum, which is also perfectly legitimate. So either way, the child is fine. What about the second child? Now you'll ask me the obvious question. What second child? Huh? So what second child? It means, the Mishnah didn't say this, but what if they don't divorce? Now that's what they're supposed to do, obviously. The Mishnah says that. But what if they don't divorce and they stay together and they produce another child? So now this second child could be a mamzer.
It's a
suffolk mamzer. And so now this will lead us to our first big discussion of today. Big discussion. I mean, I know we just covered a lot of important discussions, but first big discussion today. And what is the status of a suffolk mamzer? I'll give you your two options in just a moment. But before I give you your two options, so let's see the Bryce inside. Visheni mamzer mi suffolk. So the Tanakham says that the second one is a mamzer from suffolk. Okay, think about those words. I'll read them again. Visheni mamzer mi suffolk. He's a mamzer as a result of a suffolk. What is he saying? Is he saying it's a mamzer because it's a suffolk, or is he saying no, it's a suffolk? Well, before you answer that question, look at the next line of the Braisa. Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov Omer, ain mamzer mi suffolk. And Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov says, no, there's no mamzer mi suffolk. Okay. At this juncture, it is totally unclear what the Tanakhama is saying and what Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov is saying. And so what we'll be doing for the next 15, 20 minutes of the daf today is trying to get our heads wrapped around what each of these opinions is saying. Look, meaning before we try to understand what they're saying, we know what the story is. If they have another child, this child may be a mamzer. Think about it. Either the baby that came out 7 months later belonged to the first husband, which means that there was Zera, which means that there was no mitzvah of Yibum, which means that he's currently now married to an Erva, which means that the child is a mamzer. That's option A. Option B is that the child that came out 7 months later is his child, which means that he fulfilled the mitzvah of Yibum, which means that he's married to his Yavama through the mitzvah of Yibum, which means that any subsequent child that's issued is going to be a perfectly legitimate child. So we already know that this next child that comes out, if they're going to produce another child, is a suffolk. We know that already, before we're reading anything in the Gemara. So when the Gemara then brings down two opinions on this matter, so really we're only left scratching our head wondering, what are they saying? Obviously they're saying something, but what are they saying? So again, the Tanakhama says, mamzer mi suffolk. And Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says, ain mamzer mi suffolk. So what's going on over here? What are they saying? So here we go, my kamar. That's the Gemara's next question. What are they saying? Am Rabbi Achi kamar. So Abai gives his pshat, and it goes like this. Rishon Raelios Kohen, Gadol v'sheni suffolk mamzer, v'amzer ben mamzeres. The Tanakhama's position is, look, the first child, the seven-month gestated child that comes out, so he's fine, for the reasons that we already explained. And the second child now that they're going to have, which they shouldn't have had, but the second one they're going to have, so he's a suffolk mamzer. And you know what? It's terrible to be a suffolk mamzer. Because you know what you're not? You're not kosher, and you're not a mamzer. You are in total limbo. Right? And what are your marriage options? It's a disaster. Right? And even finding another suffolk is not going to help for reasons which we're about to explain. So in other words, you can't marry a kosher because you may be a mamzer. You can't marry a mamzer because you may be a kosher. So,
what about
huh? With another suffolk mamzer. So if I can put it I will put it in layman's terms. You know the DC battery with the positive and the negative. So I've given this analogy before. So you don't know. In other words, obviously, if you read the signs, you'll know which way to put it in. But if you don't read the signs, it's, you know, right. You may be putting it correctly, you may not be putting it correctly. So when one suffolk meets another suffolk, the first suffolk may be a kosher, and the second suffolk may be a mamzer. So it's a disaster. But that's the opinion of Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. Fine. That is Abaye's understand. I'm sorry. I take that last line back because I was wrong. That's the opinion of the Tanakhama, according to Abaye. And now what is Rabbi Eliezer saying? Rabbi Elazar Omer, Eino Safek Mamzer, Lavada Mamzer, Mota Ben Mamzeres. And Rabbi Elazar Ben Yaakov's point is, no, it's not a Safek. Meaning, I understand that you can make the argument that it's a Safek, but there's no such thing. even as a Safek, his status is a mamzer. That's what Rav Elazar ben Yaakov is saying. So again, let's just review. We have now this second child that they should not have had, but they had. And the second child is a Safek. So what status does he have? So according to Abaye, here's our two opinions. Tanakama and Rav Elazar ben Yaakov. Tanakama says the Safek is exactly that, a Safek. Right? And in limbo, in a halachic limbo. Can't marry Kasher, can't marry Mamzer, can't even marry another Safek. And Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, according to Abaye, says no. That when you're a Safek Mamzer, your status is that of a Mamzer. Right, correct, correct. Right, very good. Rava Amar, Rava says no. Hachi Kamar. Rava has a different interpretation of the machlokas between the Tanakam and Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov. Rishon Raelios calling out of Vashenim Mamzer, Vadai, Mi Safek. The Tanakama is the one who's making this argument that, you know what, he's a, the second child that comes out is a Safek, but his status is a Mamzer. Umat about Mamzeres, and therefore allowed to marry Mamzeres. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov amrein vada Mamzer mi Safek, ala Safek Mamzer vasa ben Mamzeres. And Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov is making the argument, no, he's not a vada Mamzer, he's a Safek Mamzer, which means he's a Safek. So basically, Abai and Rava are flipping the two Shitas. Now, the Kamiflagi by the Rebbe El Azar. And the Gemara points out that this machlokas Abai and Rava is really another machlokas, meaning it falls in line with another debate. Did not Rebbe Lazar Amar Vadam Vadam Motor Vadam Vasafik Vasafik Vivadam Vasafik Vasafik Aser? Rebbe El Azar is of the opinion the Gemara Kedushin. The Gemara Kedushin, by the way, in the fourth parak, deals with all these questions of who can marry whom, which makes perfect sense because the Gemara Kedushin is dedicated to the topic of marriage. So the fourth parak over there, the four parakim and Kedushim altogether, the fourth parak over there discusses who can marry who. The opinion of Rebbe Elazar is, Avada can marry Avadai, meaning he knows he's kosher, she knows she's kosher, good. The two can marry together. And a Safek, Safek's in a terrible position. Avada can marry a Safek can marry Avadai, a Safek can marry a Safek, and what are examples of Safek? Ve'elein Sfeikan, Shesuki Asufi Bikusi. They are, the Gemara gives examples, three examples. I'll just quickly run through each one of them. Shesuki, Rashi explains over here, Rashi explains in Kedushin as well, is that he thinks he knows who his father is. He calls out to him as dad, and mom says to him, Shtok, be quiet. Meaning, that's not dad. Okay. Who is dad? Mom's not saying. Okay, that's one example of a Safek. Another, a Sufi, Rashi explains, you picked him up off the street. Kid was running around the street, you don't know his mother's, you don't know his father's, you picked him up off the street, okay. You don't know. And finally, Kusi, Rashi explains why is a Kusi a Safek? Because they follow the Torah, but with a literal interpretation. This week's Parsha, Chai Yisrael, what do we learn? That the way that you acquire a field is through money. We know, it's the beginning of Kedushin, first discussion Kedushin, based on Xer Shava, a marriage could be affected with money as well. Kedusha Kesef. The Kusim, Xer Shava, no. And so therefore, as Rashi explains over here, if a Kedushin is Mekash Bekesef, they don't think that's Kedushin. No, why they would even do it to begin with, who knows, but that's not Kedushin. And so therefore, what they're going to do after that is they're going to go ahead and marry somebody else. And that, of course, would yield, from our perspective, a mamzer. So again, so in all these cases, we don't know. So these are all cases of Safek. Now, v'am Rav Yehuda amar Rav halacha k'Rebbe Elazar. And Rav Yehuda, quoting the name of Rav, says that's the halacha. The halacha falls like Rav Elazar. So now, let's just finish, let's continue with this. Gemara ki amrisa kama d'shmul amar li. Now, I said this over to Shmuel. Remember, Rav Yehuda, first he studied by Rav, and then he went, after Rav died, he went and he got learned by Shmuel. And Hillel Shana Asar Yuchsin Alami Bavo. And Shmuel says to me, no, that's not the halacha. And the halacha goes like this. Hillel taught us that there were 10 classifications of Jews who came out of Bavo. And they are, and we're going to do them in three groups. Now, group number one, Kohen Levi Israeli. Okay, good. That's group number one, Kohen Levi Israel. Obviously, the first group is Glatt Kosher. Okay, group number two, Chalale Giri Charure. Group number two are also kosher, but a Kohen devoid of his Kedusha, a Ger, an emancipated slave. Okay, perfectly good status, but they don't have Yichus. And then group number three, made up of four different people, Mamzer, Nisin, Shasuki, Vasufi. Okay, so you have a group, the first group, Kohen Levi Yisrael. Second group, Chalal, Ger, and Harure. And third group are your Psulim. Right, your Mamzer, your Nisin, your Shasuki, Vasufi. Nisin, by the way, are our slaves. The Givonim, who were put into slavery by David HaMelech. Okay. Anyway, Kulan Mutarim Lavo Zebezet. Now, the last line of this Mishnah, in of itself, it's impossible to understand. They're all permitted to marry one another. I can't be. Obviously. Moms that can't marry a Jew, that's a pasuk in the Torah. What it means is, Rashi explains over here, is that one group can marry the group next to it. So in other words, if we can put the group in A, B, and C, a group from A can marry a group from B, and a group from B can marry a group from C, but obviously A and C can marry one another. Okay. Anyway, let's make the point, and let's make it clearly. In this group, what do we have? We have our Shasuki, we have our Sufi. One Shasuki is allowed to marry another Shasuki. A Shasuki is a Safek. The other Shasuki is a Safek. And Shmuel is now telling his new student, Rav Yehuda, no, look, I'm telling you the halacha falls like Hillel. Which means then that a Safek can marry a Safek. So I don't agree with Rav. Fine. The Atamat Halachika Rabbi Lazar. Now, what do we have right now? Let's organize the Shitas. We have now, a Machlokas between Rav and Shmuel, which really is a Machlokas between Rabbi Lazar and Hillel, the Tanayim. Rabbi Lazar says that a Safek can marry a Safek, and it goes without saying a Safek can marry a Vadai, and we have the opinion of Hillel that no, a Safek can marry another Safek. And a Suffolk Mamzer can marry a Vade Mamzer. And now, the Gemara says, and now we'll understand Abai and Rava. Abai says, V'la kishmuel damar lacha kehillel. So Abai holds like Shmuel, who says, V'alacha falls like Hillel. Umuki la rebe lazer ben yagav aliba de hilchasa ki hecha dolo tiksha hilchasa hilchasa. And then what he does is that, when going back now to the Brisa, where all this started, on the top, not on the top, in the middle of the Amud, where we have the opinion of Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, so he interprets Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov aliba de hilchasa according to what the halacha is. Because remember, Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov doesn't say much. But right, whatever he says, kavanaki, it's clean, it's pure. So in other words, now here he's saying, but the truth of the matter is, it's ambiguous what he's saying. So Abai looks at the statement. Abai says, look, my tradition is to go like Shmuel, who goes like Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Elazar. So therefore, I'm going to interpret Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov to go according to the accepted halacha. Okay. It's not manipulation. It's just simply what Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov's statement is somewhat ambiguous, and based on what I know to be the halacha, so I'm going to translate Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov that way. And Rava Savala Karab, the Amar Halacha Karab Elazar. And Rava, who holds like Rabbi Elazar, Omukala lechad Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, aliba de hilchasa kilehechad olotisha hilchasa hilchasa. Rava, on the other hand, says, no, my tradition is to go like, I'm sorry, Rava says, my tradition is to go like Rav, who goes like Rabbi Elazar, which is that a Safek can't marry another Safek, and a Safek can't marry a Vadai. So therefore, when interpreting Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, I'm going to interpret it lahalacha, which is that this second issue, this second child, is a Safek. And as a result of that, what's his status? Status is Safek. And he's stuck. Okay. I assume... I didn't look up the Rambam, but here I think it's a very safe assumption. I see all notes and all indications go like Rav. Look, in a halacha, in a machlok between Rav and Shmuel, we go like Rav. In a machlok between Rav and Abai, we go like Rava. And in this regard, they are all indicating that a Safek cannot marry another Safek, a Safek Mamzer cannot marry a Vada Mamzer. It is interesting, though, because that pits him against Hillel.
Yeah.
Agreed. Agreed. That makes this part of the discussion interesting. I have as much information as you do. So now Abai is going to make his argument. How do I know that Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says that a Safek has status of a Vadai? A Safek Mamzer is a Vadai. How do I know that? Because let's take a look at another statement to Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. This is a Tosefta. Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov Amar Hari Shabal Nashim Harbe Ve'en Yodei Alayzim Ein Ba. The Gemara describes a man who unfortunately has relations with a number of women and he doesn't even know who he's having them with. And v'chein hishabau ala ha'nashim harbe v'ein yodam ezem em kiblam. And let's say a woman also behaves in a similar fashion where she's just having relations with a number of men and she doesn't know who the father is. The result is terrible. Meaning we're going to have relatives marrying one another and the reason why is because they don't know they're related. And the world is going to be filled with mamzerim. Notice, what is the statement to Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov? The world is going to be filled with, not safek, but mamzerim. And the world is going to be filled with zima. So so what do you see? That even though these, obviously it's a safek, we don't know if there's real mamzerim over here, but the way he's describing it, it sounds like vadai. So again, this is another piece of evidence from Abai's perspective that a vadai has a status of, I'm sorry, that a suffix has the status of a vadai. Rabba Amalacha Hachikam, and Rabba will say in his defense, no. Zumahi. No. When Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov is punctuating that sentence by saying, and this is Zima, no, that doesn't mean it's a vadai. It means Zima, a contraction of the word Zumahi. Meaning we don't know what this is. We're living in the world where we don't know. Which I often feel is the case, but fine. That's how Rava would understand the punctuation of Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. Yes, okay, Namar, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. And then, as long as the Gemara quoted the beginning of this Tosefta, the Gemara now quotes the end of the Tosefta. Lo yisad am isha bebedina zuba yelech visa isha bebedina acheres. Okay, here's what you should not do. Don't having multiple wives, polygamy, fine. Okay, I understand for the last 1,000 years, no, but. And probably even earlier, we stopped practicing polygamy. But fine. But having more than one wife, the Torah is fine with that. But the problem is having them in two different locations. That Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says you shouldn't do. Because what then is going to result is that you're going to have a brother and sister, and they don't know that they're brother and sister. They're unaware of each other's relationship because Dad never said. You have a sister, you know, in Yenemsveld. Okay. So, okay. And that then brings us to the next part of the Gemara. Small wince on my part before we start it. We've seen this Gemara before. It's not the first time we start in Yuma. Gemara in Yuma goes over the same discussion. The Gemara says, you're not allowed to have multiple wives in different locations. The Gemara says, Vaha Rab, Ki Ekla Dar Dashir, Machriz Vamar Manhavi Aluyume. So the Gemara says, we know that when Rab went to go visit a town, Dar Dashir, geographically, I don't know where it is, but the point is that he traveled, he was away from his wife for a while, and he has the Yetzer Hara, we all do. Baruch Hashem, because Baruch Hu gave us both the Yetzer Tov and Yetzer Hara. So he goes to Dar Dashir, and he wants to make sure that in order to not engage in any illicit behavior, so he takes a wife. All right, for a day. And Rav Nachman, we've heard this before. And Rav Nachman, wait just one second. Rav Nachman, kikla l'shachnetziv, machriz v'amar manhav l'yume. And Rav Nachman also, when he went to the town of Shachnetziv, so he also engaged in that same behavior where he basically took a wife for a day. So, and of course, I understand. I'm going to show just a moment of self-awareness. Doesn't seem like the behavior of Gedolim, but again, they're taking them as wives. Now, okay, whatever. Let's go through the Gemara and
So wait,
just one second. Right, let's see the Gemara. So Shani Rabbanan to Pekish Mayo. Now, what bothers the Gemara right now? There's going to be a couple technical problems aside from the larger problem of taking on a wife and then what? And then just to divorce her. But okay, let's. But right now, there's the technical problem is what about what the Gemara just raised? Siblings not being unaware of each other. So if they're going to take on a wife in another town. So that's going to yield a child who's not going to necessarily know that they have a brother or a sister, and it may result in a suffix. So the Gemara says, okay. So the Gemara says, no, that's not going to be a problem because the being the son of Rav, being the son of Rav Nachman, people will know. In other words, you're not just anyone. You're the son of Rav. You're the son of Rav Nachman. So even if they father a child out there in Shachnetziv, the Gemara says that's fine. Meaning, people will know that who the father is. Okay, Gemara brings in another technical problem. The Gemara here describes what we refer to in halacha as dam chimun, meaning that when a woman bleeds, a man can't be with a woman. Over here, the woman's bleeding, but this is not menstrual blood. It's what's called dam chimun. the excitement of a proposition of marriage, so it causes her to bleed. Now, what status does this bleeding have? So we've discussed this back in Masechta Nida. It's not totally clear what status this bleeding have. It's called menstrual bleeding. It's Dam Nida. It's not Dam Nida. It's some other type of bleeding. It may be, well, maybe put under the same category of Dam Besulim, but either way. But and she needs to wait seven clean days. So how can they just pop into town and say, okay, who wants to marry me and take a wife? And what about this Dam Chimun? So the Gemara's answer to that is Rabbanu Shluchayu have a Meshaju Modulahu. So the Gemara says, well, emissaries would go out and they put posters up when the Gadol's coming to town. So here emissaries would go out and say, you know, who would like to marry so and so for a day. Okay. Ebayis Ema, I know. Ebayis Emla Rabbanin Yechud Ba'amu Demiachdulahu. Or the Gemara makes the following suggestion, and that is, and again, this now presumably is going to answer the first question. Okay? Presumably. And that is that they wouldn't actually have relations with these women, but they were just Mimiachin. Amamarina Dama Mishesh Lo Paspasala, Mishen Lo Paspasalo. And again, the whole purpose of doing this is to rein in their Yetzirah. So the Gemara says, okay, it'll rein in their Yetzirah because they're going to have a wife, even if they're not going to be intimate with them. But still, the idea of paspasalo is that when there's food on the table, there's food in the cabinet, so you stress less. So here also it's paspasalo. Now, I'll tell you the truth, we could spend a lot more time on this because it's hard to understand why it's paspasalo. In fact, it's hard to understand why yichud would even be mutter.
Would they divorce and pay ketubah for this woman afterwards?
It sounds that way. Take a look at the top Tosfos over here. I'm not going to go through it right now in the interest of time, but take a look at Tosfos. Tosfos is bothered by how is this going to solve the Yetzer Hara issue. How can they even have Yichud altogether? The Gemara beginning Suvas. Anyway, please see Tosfos for a discussion over here. The Gemara,
I
hear you. But look, the truth of the matter is that we're behind, and the Gemara is bringing it up right now only as an incidental point to just challenge Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says you can't have a wife in this town, a wife in another town. If you're going to have multiple wives, they have to live in proximity to one another. And the Gemara then challenges based on the practices of Rav and Rav Nachman, and the Gemara answers, okay, Tana. Let's go on. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov Amar Lo Yisa Adam Ishto V'Da'ato L'Garsha. A man can't be married to a woman with the intent of divorcing her, meaning that is totally inappropriate behavior. Can't use the word usher, but totally not appropriate. Mishum Shenamar Atachrosh El Re'echa Ra U Yoshel V'Tachitach. The pasuk in Mishlei teaches us that if your friend has confidence and trust in you, so don't ruin that trust and confidence. You're marrying a woman. Obviously, she thinks that you're going to provide for her security and protection. And then you're going to marry her only to divorce her. That's you're violating the pasuk of Mishlei. It's you're not doing the Ratzon HaBorei. That's not what God wants of us. Okay. And here we go. The total number, I think, when all said and done, is 8. Okay, the Gemara coming up right now is going to be complicated. We are running out of time. We're going to try to get through at least 2 of the 8 cases. We now know. Now, in a scenario in which the brother marries his Yavama only 2 months after his brother died and has a child 7 months later, so we now know that the child is fine. In fact, the Gemara tells us the child can be a Kohen Gadol. But now we get on to financial matters, because in terms of his ability to marry another Jew and to serve as a spiritual leader of the Jewish people, perfect. But then when you get to money issues, so the money issues here are going to get tricky, to say the least. Now, let's remember, in every scenario of Yibum, so first of all, just a reminder that the Yavam inherits all the estate of the deceased brother, meaning one of the entitlements of Yibum is that you get the widow, but you also get the money as well. Wrong conjunction. You get the widow and you get the money of the deceased. So so now what we're going to be discussing is we don't know who his father is. Okay? So it's an interesting scenario. So now how is this estate going to be divided between him and his brothers? the Gemara is going to give us not one, not two, but eight different scenarios in terms of who he's going to be arguing with over the estate. So let's go now, case number one. Case number one is the easiest case. I don't know about the easiest, but okay, case number one. Suffolk v'Yavam. Sheba lachlok b'nechse misna. So we have now the Suffolk, we have the Yavam. So when we say Suffolk, we know what we're talking about. That is a child who came out 7 months after Yibum. And we don't know who his father is. It may be the dead brother, that's the Gemara's description of Misna, or it may be the one who is right now currently alive. And we have the Yavam. That's the brother who didn't do right. He married his widow only 2 months after she was a widow. So now they're coming to divide the estate of the dead. Suffolk Amar, and let's now look at each one of their claims. Suffolk Amar, not Bar Misnahu, v'nichse didehu. So the Suffolk says, look, you know what I am? I'm his son. As such, I should inherit his estate. And Yavam Amar, at Barai didi, at v'leis lach v'lomidi. And the Yavam says, no, you're my son. Now, neither of them know this, but obviously the point is that this is the best claim they could make, not knowing if each one of them is factually correct or not, but what they're saying. So, have a mama namuta basafik, a mama namuta basafik holkin. So in the first case over here, what we would call the simplest case, we don't know. This is money that is in a state of suffik, and we know mama namuta basafik holkin, you divide that money. Okay, huh? Between the Yavam and his and the Suffolk child. Case number two, Suffolk ubnei Yavam shebal lachlok b'nechse misna. We have now the Suffolk and his brothers. Now, when I say his brothers, we're going to put that term very loosely. We're going to put those terms in quotes. We don't know. We don't know if it's his brothers. So, and they're coming to divide the estate of the mace. Meaning of the dead brother. Suffolk Amarahu Gavra Bar Misna. So now the Suffolk says, you know who that was? That was my father. V'nichse didihu, which means that I am the sole. I'm solely entitled to that, to his estate. And Bnei Yavam Amri Atachinuat. And the Bnei Yavam say, no, you're not. You're our brother. You're our dad's son. Umanasa hu de islach bahadan. And so, what are you therefore entitled to? A portion of the estate, but that's it. You're not entitled to the entire dead brother's estate.
Should he be counted as a
kol? Correct. Meaning, right. In their argument, you're right. It's a good point. In their argument, they're saying it's a bechor, but not everything. Their argument is not everything. Mm-hmm. So, hadan. All right. This is. I want to get through the rest of two. We're not going to get through it because we're going to have to learn a mission together on Daf Kuf. And okay, this one already is going to get tricky. Okay. So, and what we're going to be doing now, we're going to start tomorrow right away with case number two. We're going to go through eight different scenarios in which there's going to be a debate between this Suffolk and his brothers and his father. And because it's a Suffolk, we're going to see in all these scenarios. And the conclusions are going to be different in all these scenarios for reasons which we're going to explain in terms of what he is entitled to. Stop over here.